we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. It is, it's a new day in America when you have guys like Bill Maher and Donald Trump sitting down together, right? I mean, thank you, Kid Rock. I'm not kidding. I really am glad this happened, not just from an entertainment perspective. I mean, I literally want to say praise God for using people like Kid Rock to bring people of opposite views together. We need that in America. I've said it for a long time. I've said it over and over again. Civil discourse or civil war. That's your two options. If you don't have civil discourse, if you don't have the freedom and the willingness to sit down with people that you disagree with and discuss those disagreements, you are going to end up in civil war, especially when you're as polarized as we are, especially when you have such divergent views as we have in this nation. Let's not forget that really important opening by Patrick Henry in his Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, which was 250th anniversary just a week and a half ago, on my birthday, of course, March 23rd. Yes, he knew that it would be my birthday. I know I always say that, but yes, when I talk about Patrick Henry's speech, I have to remind everybody that Patrick Henry was some sort of prophet. He knew my birthday would be on March 23rd, so he chose that day to give the speech. None of that is true. That's all fake news, that part. Anyway, he started the speech by saying this. He said, according to the magnitude of the subject, ought to be the freedom of the debate. Only in this way can we arrive at the truth. Should I hold back my opinions out of fear of giving offense, I would offend the great creator of the universe. Now, that's not exactly word for word. It's really close, but I don't have it in front of me. But that's very, very close to what he said. And the reason he said that is because he's basically saying, listen, if I'm not willing to have freedom of the debate, then I am afraid of offending people, and that would offend God. So I would rather offend you than offend God, but I'm willing to offend you in order to have the discussion because this is the only way we can arrive at truth. In other words, he's even admitting in that line that he doesn't have a lock on the truth. So I always enter every discussion with a basic principle that if I'm wrong, I want to know. I don't have a lock on truth. I'm not 100% right. I mean, I was wrong once back in the 80s. It's been a while, but, you know, 40 years ago, I was wrong. Okay, I'm wrong a lot, all right? We all, you know, get bad data or misinformation, and we you know, jump out there on it, and then we find out, oops, that wasn't exactly accurate. We have to constantly approach these huge issues of the day with some humility. Doesn't mean we don't have confidence. I mean, you should study hard, you should do your homework, and then go in with confidence, but with the humility that says, you know what, I could be wrong. And so therefore, I'm willing to put this out there and give you the chance to counter it, give you the chance to even on this program, to call in and tell me, correct me. I welcome that. If you're a longtime listener or you listen regularly, you know when somebody calls in and disagrees with me, I love that. I think that's great. Not so that I can, you know, try to slam them and score points. I mean, that's kind of the popular thing now. You get a video because you just destroy. They do that all the time. So-and-so destroys liberal. I mean, okay, fine. That can be fun. That's not what I like to do. I like to have civil discourse. I like to ask questions about how you came to the conclusions you did. And hopefully you'll ask questions about how I came to the conclusions I did. And together, we can arrive at truth. We can figure out who's wrong. We may have to, at the end of the day, say, I just disagree. But, you know, honestly, if you're truly willing to sit down and have an extended, in-depth conversation about whatever the topic it is, if you're willing to see that to the end, you may not have to say, well, we just have to agree to disagree. You may be able to find common ground. And that's the whole point of having civil discourse. So I am a fan of any opportunity to bring differing views or people that have differing views together and give them a chance to discuss it. And that's exactly what happened at the White House on Monday. And what a cool opportunity. I mean, for Bill Maher, first of all, Bill Maher, if you're not familiar with Bill Maher, he's very liberal. And he's very smart. I mean, this is a brilliant guy, and he's very talented in using humor and basically, you know, the ability. He's very sarcastic. Okay, so there's been many times, in you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I used to watch him a lot more than I have in the last 10 or 12 years because he just is so sarcastic. You know, I shouldn't say this on the air, but you know, I wanted to put my fist through, you know, through the screen. I mean, there were just times where he was so bombastic and sarcastic towards our side, to pro-lifers, to anybody conservative, anybody religious. He even did a whole documentary thing that was basically making fun of people that of faith. And so I was never a fan of his, but I think you could say an admirer, because I admired his ability to use his gifts for what he believed in and for his side. And, you know, typically his show is one conservative and usually not a very good debater. And usually he puts conservatives on there that are not very articulate and not very good at taking on a guy like Bill Maher or the other people on his programs. Because, you know, he would typically, it was one against three. In the old days when it was HBO, whatever he called it with Bill Maher, it was always, you know, one conservative, two liberals, and Bill. So that means it's three liberals against whoever the conservative is, and usually not a conservative that could make the case very well. So even if they were, you know, very good at taking on a Bill Maher type, it was three against one. And so you had to really be good to get your points in, knowing now somebody else is going to, you know, three other people are going to get time. So it's, you know, it's not just one against three in terms of arguing, it's one against three in terms of time to make your argument on the show. Okay, so it's always a stacked deck with him. Okay, but it was still entertaining. And there's been times where I like the format that he's used the last few years, where he would go one-on-one with somebody sometimes. Like, I remember him going one-on-one with Dan Crenshaw, one-on-one with, I think he went one-on-one with Ben Shapiro, if I remember, or one-on-one with people like that. That's much better, right? And I think that's been good civil discourse. Shapiro does the same thing with his Sunday show, right? One-on-one. Sometimes he's interviewing somebody like-minded. Sometimes he's taking on somebody that's not. That's healthy, healthy, healthy for the country. Well, in this case, it was not on a show. It was not, I don't even think there's a live recording of, or a recording of the entire conversation. There's actually just some pictures of them taking the tour of the White House. Well, Bill Maher, for all of his liberal positions and all of the water he's carried for Democrats over the decades, all of the support he's given to Democrats and to presidential candidates, he's never been to the White House, apparently. This was his first time to go to the White House. So it was not just a Republican that invited him. It was like the Republican that he's made the most fun of and criticized and been sarcastic about above and beyond any other Republican in history. And that's the guy, Donald Trump, that allows him to come to the White House while he's the resident of the White House. So kudos to Kid Rock for setting this thing up. Apparently Dana White was also there. So just imagine being able to sit at that dinner table, Dana White, Kid Rock, Bill Maher, and Donald Trump. That would have been a cool dinner to be invited to. Interesting. And one of the best parts that I heard about, I think it was maybe Kid Rock on Fox and Friends talking about it or somewhere else. I just saw it on X. But apparently, Bill Maher shows up with a list of grievances. So he basically brings, like, you know, with the Declaration of Independence, it was 27 grievances. I don't know how many Bill Maher had on his list, but it was things that apparently Donald Trump had said about Bill Maher that Bill Maher was offended by. And so what does Donald Trump do? He signs it and gives it back. I mean, come on. Ultimate troll, folks. Ultimate troll. So good. So good. All right. So I am celebrating this, and hopefully we will see a lot more of it. We invite people all the time. You know, hey, phone lines are open, 888-589-8840. You may have a difference with me, something I've said over the years. You know, which is why I always say, comments, questions, insults, whatever you got, bring it on. I mean, that's healthy, healthy, healthy for the country, and hopefully we will see a lot more of it. I think it's very good. Now, the other thing that was in the news in the last couple of days is Donald Trump being, when I say ultimate troll, for him to even tease a third term in the White House, he knows he can't do it. He knows it's unconstitutional. He knows we would have to repeal the 22nd Amendment. I mean, the crazy, you know, kind of string together all these possibilities of could he be vice president and J.D. Vance be president. And they did the same thing with Barack Obama. Could he be the vice presidential candidate? And is that, you know, does that violate the 22nd Amendment or the 12th Amendment or the ability to, you know, you got to be eligible to be president? It's totally a troll, folks. This is entirely Donald Trump doing the thing where he says, hey, watch my left hand over here while I do a magic trick, and then my right hand over here is getting things done in Washington, D.C., and signing some more executive orders. And actually, I might have that backwards because I think he's left-handed. But anyway, all of that to say, he's not running for third term, folks. He's already won three times, okay? They stole it from him the second time, and so he officially is in his second term at this point, and therefore, at the end of this term, will be ineligible and be 83, right? 82, 83, 84, whatever he's going to be. And J.D. Vance is going to be chomping at the bit and ready to be president of the United States, or Ron DeSantis, or whoever it's going to end up being in the Republican primary. I have a feeling it will be J.D. Vance if they keep this up, because it's going to be the old Bush, you know, Reagan-Bush thing, where Bush runs in 92 for essentially a third term for Reagan. He doesn't end up governing like Reagan and therefore loses in 92. But J.D. Vance is going to be positioned perfectly, I would predict, to run for an actual third Trump term, meaning Trump policies for a third term. But I'm so enjoying the trolling, though. If you watch the liberal heads explode over this thing, it's hilarious. And then what happened? I don't know who the reporter was, but Trump sitting there at the desk, and somebody asked, well, what if Obama ran for a third term? And Trump smiles and says, I would love that. I would too, folks. Talk about cage match of the centuries. If it was it was Obama and Trump, you're basically talking about the Democrat Party's best spokesman of the last, you know, at least 30 years. I mean, you could argue that Clinton was maybe better than Obama, but Obama really does embody the Democrat Party, the left-wing Democrat Party, and all of their policies and all of the things that they did to radically transform America. I mean, that was the Marxist march towards destruction for America. It was the Obama administration. That was really the beginning. In 2008, when he got elected, he said they're going to radically transform the country, and they did. Clinton was much more of finger to the wind, whatever's popular. He just wants to be popular and just wants to be in the White House. And that's why he was, you know, anti-welfare reform until it passed twice. He vetoed it twice, actually, passed the House twice. And then he ends up signing it because he knew the winds of change were there and he needed to sign it. So Clinton versus, Bill Clinton versus Donald Trump probably wouldn't be quite as much a quintessential, here's the two standard bearers, torch bearers of the two major parties in America, head to head, the philosophies that they have brought into the government and the things that they have brought about. It would really be Obama and Trump, and that would be the ultimate. So I think that's why he smiled when that was brought up. And then, of course, you know, of course, it's unconstitutional for both. It's not going to happen, but it's just fun. It's fun to talk about, and it's definitely Trump trolling the left masterfully, might I add, because it gets people talking about it. That's what everybody's focused on. Meanwhile, he's getting all these good things done. So I just, you know, hats off to Bill Maher, to Kid Rock, and to President Trump for having the conversation on Monday. Hats off to President Trump for, again, being the ultimate troll and being better at this than anyone in history, and continuing to getting amazing things done. Now, we're going to talk about something that he's getting done that is controversial among conservatives, and that is the whole tariff thing. And I'm going to give you my thoughts just from an economic perspective and a good or bad policy in terms of tariffs, and then we'll look at what's actually happening on the ground around the world as a result of what he's doing with the tariffs. So that's going to be an interesting one, but he's certainly moving forward full steam ahead with these tariffs, and it's already getting results, good and bad, and we'll talk about what that means for you and me in our own wallets. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You are listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. The phone number is 888-589-8840. Back in a moment.
Share-a-thon is a special time to me for reasons beyond funding our ministry. During Share-a-thon, I'm reminded of the vital partnerships we have with listeners around the country. It's encouraging to hear the stories and have so many calls from people who have recognized what a blessing it is to be able to share a Christian perspective and the Word on AFR. God has blessed us with this platform, and we get to use it for the cause of Christ.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming April 8th through 10th, and it's your chance to renew your partnership with American Family Radio.
We deliberately don't receive any government support, so our listeners are essential to the funding and continued operations of this ministry. And in addition to operational capital, Share-a-thon renews the spirits of those of us who work here.
Join us April 8th through 10th for Spring Share-a-thon on American Family Radio. This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me today. We got we got a lot to talk about. We're definitely going to talk about the tariffs. We definitely want to get to the phones. And listening to Tim talk about those trips, I got to tell you, I just got to encourage you. You got to go on one of these trips. If you haven't stepped into these places of history, if you haven't walked in the footsteps of the founding fathers and just been able to experience those things, you're missing out. I'm telling you, you can watch the videos all day long. I mean, that's one reason we did Chasing American Legends, is so that if you couldn't actually go there, then you could watch it and you could see it through my kids' eyes and my eyes as we were experiencing it in comedian Brad Stein. So if you can't go experience it, then Chasing American Legends is the second best thing. But I'm telling you, to be able to go with Tim Wildman and with Stephen McDowell and Walker and just all the people that you'd have the chance to visit with and have telling you the stories as you're doing it. I mean, for sure, obviously, Israel and those kind of things, amazing. Going to those places, incredible. For me, though, I'm telling you, to be able to go to Williamsburg and to Boston, it's just, you can't beat it. So do go check that out, wildmangroup.com. WildmanGroup.com. Check out those trips and definitely make some plans to go on those. We're going to be going ourselves. Our family is going to go for the 250th of the Shot Heard Around the World. So we did that 10 years ago when we made the Chasing American Legends episode, Who Shot First? And we actually marched with the Minutemen for the reenactment. We went to Paul Revere ride on the night before to Jonas Clark's house, which is Jonas Clark was the pastor there at Lexington, a great example of the pastor and the church being the epicenter of the community. Sam Adams, John Hancock were quite literally staying there at Pastor Clark's house. And that's why Revere was going to their house to tell them, hey, you got to get out of town because the British want to kill you. And anyway, you get to see all of that being reenacted. And so we did that 10 years ago. We went back, I think, 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Well, it was before COVID, so it would have been 5 or 6 years ago, and took a group, and then we're going to go again this year because it's the 250th. So it's going to be crazy packed, I know, but we're just got to do it, man. Just got to do it. I just love that. That's one of my favorite stories in all of American history, is standing there on the Lexington Green. I've told the story for almost 30 years. I first heard the story from a guy named Dr. Kenneth McFarland. So if you're listening today and you remember that name, or you ever got to see Dr. McFarland speak, he was just absolutely the best at telling American history and telling those stories in the 60s and 70s. Incredible. And one of my mentors, I never got to meet Dr. McFarland, but one of my mentors, Dr. Charles Jarvis, who was one of the best after-dinner speakers in American history, just an amazing guy. He was one of my constituents when I was in the state house, and I got to know him then. I'd grown up listening to this guy. So I'm talking like cassette tapes with my dad, driving around the country when I'd travel with my dad, listening to Dr. Jarvis. And then I met him when I was running for state rep back in 1997, and we became very good friends, and he became a wonderful mentor of mine, would critique all my speeches, basically gave me all of his jokes. I still to this day, if you ever hear me give a speech, after dinner speech or speech at a convention or something like that, I guarantee you somewhere in that speech I'm using Dr. Jarvis material and Dr. McFarland material. I'm either using one of Dr. Jarvis's jokes or one of McFarland's stories, but McFarland is the one that told the story of the shot heard around the world so powerfully. And I literally mirrored it. I mean, I took it, made it my own, and I've told it probably 1,000 times, probably more than that, actually, all over the country in speech after speech. And so then to actually get to stand there on the Lexington Green and actually live the story during the reenactment, oh, nothing better. I'm telling you, we actually captured it on film whenever we did Chasing American Legends. I'm standing on the, you know, they got the ropes and the reenactment's happening and the Lexington, the Minutemen are out there lined up with all the muskets and the British are coming over the hill and you see all this sea of red and my wife is literally having to hold me back. I am wanting to jump over the rope, grab a musket and get in the fight. I mean, it's just so cool. So anyway, go on one of these tours. You don't want to miss it. WildmanGroup.com. And I can't remember the dates that Tim was saying, but I think it's this summer and in the fall. I don't know that we have any room to go with us April 19th this year. It's actually April 18th. We're going to fly in on April 17th, be there for the 18th, so we can do Paul Revere's ride and the March with the Minutemen, and then the reenactment will be on the morning of the 19th, 250th anniversary of the shot heard around the world. So if you want to be there for that, patriotacademy.com, click on the Chasing Legends tour, and I don't even know if we have room left, but if we do, you can go. Okay, let's grab a phone call, and then I'm going to talk about tariffs. Let's see Kim in Arkansas before we jump into tariffs. Kim, you're up next. Comment, question, insult, go Hi. For it.
Hi. I am just calling to thank you for your amazing ability and gift that you have. I am a Southern California transplant to Arkansas and been here 10 years now.
From SoCal to Arkansas. Where in Arkansas did you move?
Bentonville, Rogers, Northwest.
Yeah, so you're up there in Northwest. Yeah, we used to have a place in Marshall about probably 45 minutes, maybe an hour south of you there. But yeah, very familiar.
Okay, so I'm still learning the state of Arkansas and all these little places.
Most important question, though, is do you know how to call the hogs yet?
No, still I don't. I
got to teach you how to do it. We should do that right now. So what you do is you raise your hands in the air and you say, "Woo, pig, suey, woo, pig, suey." And then you do it a third time. You say, "Woo, pig, suey, razorbacks." Okay, now you know. And a Texan taught you how to do it.
I love it. So that is awesome. I'll just leave it for you today. But I wanted to tell you also, when I think of you and listen to you, I always remember during the COVID time of riding in airplanes or flying in airplanes.
Ugh.
And I remember having the mask on and flying into Salt Lake City, and I felt extremely brave. So as soon as I got off the plane, I took it off. And I started walking, and this lady stewardess started yelling at me. And I thought, just be brave. Rick Green does this. And I thought, if I ever came to an airport, and there's a guy that doesn't have a mask on, it's him. So that was awesome. But I have learned history. I have learned so many things from you. And I just wanted to call and thank you. It's a blessing.
Well, Kim, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for being brave. In fact, Kirk Cameron's new book is called Be Brave. And that was such a horrific time back then. And I remember, you know, how miserable they made everybody. I mean, you just didn't want to fly. You didn't want to go anywhere. They treated you like cattle. They were just so incalcitrant, so unwilling. I had a friend that actually did a class with us, flew out to Vegas and did one of our constitutional defense courses, which is Constitution and handgun training together. And she had it was like an asthmatic problem. She couldn't wear a mask. She literally had a medical letter and everything where she could not wear a mask. And I think it was Southwest would not let her fly home without putting that mask on. She literally could not do it. Like it would have, you know, choked her, and it was very bad. And she had to book another flight on a different airline to get home. And I just remember that being one of the worst examples. I mean, I got kicked off of a flight once just for letting it dangle on my ear. I saw families get kicked off because their two-year-old kid couldn't keep the mask on, which is absurd that they would have them even trying to make them wear it. Child abuse. And it was just miserable. And so, once you got off the plane, of course, take that mask off and walk through the airport without it. And so thank you for being brave, and welcome to Arkansas. Now, part of the reason I know how to call the Hogs, I'm actually from Little Rock originally. I don't usually admit that, but I'll admit it for Kim since she has moved to Arkansas. No, I love Arkansas, and I'm kind of a Texarkanan, even though I never lived in Texarkana. We went back and forth from Arkansas. We moved from Arkansas to Texas when I was 9, and I've got a wonderful family all over Arkansas in Little Rock and Benton and Salem and Malvern and up in northwest Arkansas and Marshall and Clinton and all over the place up there. So if any of my family's listening, I hope you enjoyed me calling the Hogs for you today. Believe it or not, when I first moved to Texas, I was not yet a proud Texan. I was actually still very much a proud Arkansan, and at 9 years old, very upset with my parents for moving me out of Arkansas, where I could go run and play in the woods, and now all of a sudden I'm living in a neighborhood. It was awful. And so my dad said, okay, we're building this house. You can pick whatever color carpet you want, and whatever drapes you want. And so I had red, Razorback color red carpet, and I had these white drapes with Go Hogs Go all over the drapes. And so that was my first foray into Texas. Then I ended up going to Angelo State University out in West Texas, and then the University of Texas. So I became a Longhorn for law school. And so anyway, so I didn't call the Hogs for a long time, but deep down, I'm still a Razorback. I got to admit it. I still, when the Razorbacks are playing, I can't help but cheer for the Razorbacks. I had to hide that one time. I married into a hardcore burnt orange Longhorn family. And when Arkansas was playing Texas, I don't know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was a long time ago. And I'm sitting on the couch with my wife's family watching the game and having to secretly cheer for the Razorbacks because they all thought I was a Longhorn because I'd gone to UT Law, right? So anyway, that was enough about the Razorbacks and the Longhorns. I know I'm all over the place today. I saw Jerry Jones on the Forbes billionaire list today, and I was scanning through it real quick just to see who all made the list. And of course, he was on there again, and it said something about him playing for the Razorbacks back when they played Texas for the championship Arkansas won the championship, and then they lost to Texas, I think, the next year or 2 years later or whatever, in the championship. Anyway, enough about the Hogs and the Longhorns. Let's get back to tariffs, okay? So tariffs, are they good? Are they bad? All right, listen, I'm going to tell you, I'm not torn on this, but I do understand both sides. And I think we're about to find out. We're about to have a really good test on how far you can go with tariffs in today's world economy. Now, of course, the founders loved tariffs. I mean, tariffs was, that's how you funded the federal government. They didn't do income tax. They did kind of have a capitation tax, which is why the Article 1, Section 8 allowed for an income tax, but it was to be apportioned evenly among the states, and it was literally supposed to be the same for everybody. It was not a progressive income tax like what we passed in 1913, the worst amendment to the Constitution, the 16th Amendment. But anyway, tariffs, it's literally right there in Article 1, Section 8, specifically authorizes the federal government to do tariffs. And it's not just so that you can collect revenue. It's also to make sure that other countries are not taking advantage of us. In other words, they're not putting their goods into America and selling them and being able to make a lot of money off of Americans and then preventing us from being able to sell into their countries and have true free enterprise, true fair trade. I am a free enterprise guy, okay? Within the American borders, I think it ought to be straight up laissez-faire, complete free enterprise, okay? I think government should be kept out of the way. I think anytime government interjects itself, it creates friction in the market, as Milton Friedman said. And it allows the government to pick winners and losers. It causes confusion in the market. There should be no Department of Labor. There should be no Department of Commerce. They should not be involved in the competition of the free market within the United States borders. And that should include across state lines. So the whole reason we had a constitutional convention in the first place in 1787, the main reason was that states were preventing free enterprise from crossing state lines. They were basically putting up barriers, preventing a merchant or, you know, other individual or business or whatever from crossing state lines and having true, free, and fair commerce. In other words, selling their goods across state lines. Well, the Constitutional Convention was called in order to stop that and to have true free enterprise. And then, you know, of course, we ended up with an entirely new constitution in order to make that happen and in order to make sure that you could collect from states to pay for wars and all of those kind of things. Okay, so they still had tariffs, though, and they specifically wanted tariffs on goods that were coming into the country. And Donald Trump has embraced this to the nth degree. I mean, he is taking us into a new area of tariffs, at least in our lifetime. Now, I have said for years that we should have tariffs on foreign oil, on anything where you need to make sure that we're not allowing other countries to take advantage of us. I always thought whenever we know that oil is enriching states and nations that are supporting terrorism and in any way being anti-American, that we should have massive tariffs on that so that we encourage drilling here in the United States and we encourage, you know, purchasing of our own goods rather than other nations. Now, having said all that, I will tell you, my oldest son, who has, you know, more degrees than me. Well, let's see, does he have more? Yeah, I think he has more degrees than me. And one of those is in economics and another one in master's in public policy and all this. He disagrees with me, okay? He does not think tariffs are good. He thinks that, you know, if you do tariffs, you're creating that same friction in the market. And in an international, you know, a world economy like we have today, that will end up hurting Americans. Okay, so we're going to find out because there's a lot of conservatives that are saying Trump should not be doing these tariffs. And there are other conservatives saying absolutely do these tariffs, create a level playing field because these nations that are putting tariffs on our goods create these trade deficits that end up being like a tax on Americans when it's all said and done. And so tariffs can level the playing field. So I'm throwing all of this out there and I'm very curious where what you're, you know, I would love to hear from you. So 888-589-8840. Phones are already lit up. We'll go to those as soon as we come back from the break. But the other thing to throw into the mix here is that it's also a weapon for President Trump to use against nations that are doing other things to harm us. So, for instance, Mexico, you know, the open border, not doing what they should be doing to stop people from coming across as well, or not taking people back that they should take back. Trump used, you know, the 25% tariff on Mexico as a threat to make Mexico do the right thing with regard to the border and with regard to taking people back and all that. So it's a weapon as well. And I think he's using it well. I mean, we're going to find out, right? I mean, the market is definitely dipping right now. The stock market is dipping based on these tariffs. We're seeing some other things that can be negatives. But will it balance out? Let's not forget that when Ronald Reagan cut taxes in 81, it hurt for a little while and then finally caught up and created the greatest peacetime economic expansion in history. The same thing could potentially happen here between the tax cuts and the tariffs of Donald Trump. So we're going to find out. We'll get a good report card in a few months to see how that's working out. We'll be right back, folks. I'm Rick Green. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. Phone number is 888-589-8840. Boy, this tariff topic's got the phones lit up. Let's go see what everybody thinks. We'll first go back to Arkansas. Kevin in Arkansas, you're up next. What you think about this tariff thing?
Yes. I was taught in school somewhere way back when that the tariffs was to level the playing field so that a foreign country couldn't undercut our prices. Say you had three companies making sewing machines. One sold for 100, one sold for 80, one sold for 75, and then the England come along and wanted to sell their sewing machines for $50. Well, you'd put a tariff on it to bring it up to the lowest American price.
Yeah.
So that then you would have the choice either buy the quality, or if the foreign product was more quality, then you would buy that. If not, then American would make their quality better.
Yeah, and you also have
the... Is that my instructor's bias?
No, I think that's the argument, right? That's definitely the... on the plus side of the equation for why to do them. And a lot of times you have, let's take a product like oil. You have places, you know, in the Middle East where it's just super cheap to get it out of the ground, right? It's just, it literally flows. And then you have fracking and other things that we do here in the United States for the most part. It's more expensive to get it out of the ground. We can eventually get it there, and we have more actually than we ever thought we had. But it's more expensive to get it out of the ground, so you can level the playing field. Plus, you have the issue of, you know, funding terrorism and you know, enemies of our state. And so, you know, there's a lot of reasons I think that it makes sense, and definitely to prevent, you know, protection. That's where the argument is, right? The protection of American business is certainly a reason to do it. But then does it end up costing Americans more and preventing competition that would have made our, you know, industry, whatever it might be, steel or whatever, better? Like, if they don't have the competition, do they get lazy? Does it end up protecting them to the point that they don't do the R&D and all of that? I don't think so, because I think you still have competition within the border, right? So you have all these other competitors for that particular product within the United States that's going to force that competition. Like, I would oppose a tariff that protected a particular company as a monopoly, but I would not oppose a tariff that protected an industry against competition, unfair competition from around the world. And not to mention just the revenue perspective of it as well. But really good point. Okay, let's stay on this topic. Judy in Texas next up on tariffs. Go ahead, Judy.
Well, howdy.
Howdy, right back
to
you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I love y'all shows.
I love the
whole network. I don't get to listen too often because I work in the schools. But I did want to mention something about the tariffs. I think that they could be a good thing. It may, like you said, hurt for a while, but I think American companies would, that people would start more American companies to fill in the gaps so that, you know, we don't have to buy foreign.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the goal, right? I mean, that certainly is a laudable goal. More jobs for us here in America, more companies that end up being created and developed. You know, there's the argument against is, of course, if you just think of the world as a marketplace of competition, if there's a country that can make something way cheaper than us and it still be just as good, you know, is that good for our economy to be able to buy it for less than we would have to buy it here in America? And that's the balance. So that's where you have to really think through where you want to do this and how you want to do this, where Trump is definitely taking a not a one size fits all, because I think today it's 10% across the board to a lot of these countries that, you know, frankly have taken advantage of us over the years for not being willing to do tariffs. And then he has higher tariffs against countries that have tariffs against us, or there's other reasons to do it. So he's not taking a total one size fits all. But there definitely will be a downside to it. It definitely will hurt in some areas. The question is, how does this end up playing out over time? And do some of these countries where he's doing these tariffs because they have tariffs on us, do they cave? And some of that's already happened, right? There's already been some significant victories as a result of the way he's playing this game. What I like about it at this point is that he is definitely the master of the art of the deal. So he has a great instinct on when to push and when to pull back and when to make a deal. And I, you know, frankly, you got to trust the guy in the room. And at some point you have to elect people to represent you if you're not the one that can go make that deal yourself. And so I tend to have a willingness to say, I'm going to trust the guy in the room. This is the guy we've hired to go make these deals. This is the guy that we've hired as the nation to represent us against other nations in making these deals. And so I would say he's probably the best on the planet at negotiating and at, you know, literally the art of the deal. He literally wrote the book on this. And so to do it at this level, you know, he's obviously got a ton of advisors and a ton of people that are weighing into these discussions, but it does at some point come down to a gut instinct on some of these things. And I trust the guy in the room in this case for sure. Okay, what? I'm looking at my call screener thing, and it's like Arkansas, then Texas, Arkansas, then Texas, Arkansas, then Texas. It's funny. I'm going to jump over to Alabama and then come back to Arkansas. So, Todd in Alabama, you're up next, man. Go ahead.
Rick, it's an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. I've been a longtime listener, and dude, your passion is just so contagious, and it makes everybody want to jump in more. Please
well, thank
don't ever
you,
give
man.
Up.
Yay, thank you, brother. Well, thanks for calling in.
I have a twofold question and a statement of Roll Tide, but I want to know.
Too much calling the hogs, huh?
I couldn't stand it. Twofold question. How do the tariffs affect things like Temu, Wish, Shine, the places that we get good stuff cheap, whatever? And the second part of the question is, if the tariffs are to equal and balance, if everybody goes, okay, no more tariffs, either side, we're done, and it makes it a free trade for the world, is this a precursor to a one world economy and to the definitely faster into the end times?
Interesting point there, Todd. Hadn't thought about that. You know, to the first question, I mean, definitely it will, you know, whatever that tariff amount is, it's going to increase those cheap goods, increase the cost of those cheap goods, which may put, well, it will. It's going to put some people out of business that are resellers here, and it's going to make it difficult, because if you put that tariff on that cheap good from China or wherever it is, and now it's the same as a higher quality good, you know, people are going to obviously choose the higher quality good. And on one hand, listen, I think you ought to have all the options, right? If you want to buy the cheaper product, you should be able to do that. And so will somebody in the U.S. crop up and be able to make that product as cheap? Probably not, because remember, these other nations are doing that with cheaper labor as much as cheaper resources. So on that front, it will make it more difficult to get the cheaper products, which could lead to inflation, right? It could cause, you know, just a cascading effect. That's the big unknown that we're going to see how much of an impact it has on the economy. To your second point, I had not thought about that at all. That's a really interesting point. If everybody had zero tariffs, are you basically going back to a Tower of Babel thing where it's a one world economy and it's a one world language? Because here's the other crazy thing I'll throw out there when you're thinking about this one. I mean, we are this close. For those of you that can see me right now, I'm doing the Maxwell Smart thing. Missed it by that much. We're this close to being able to speak to each other from all over the world in any language and understand each other because of technology. In other words, you're going to have AirPods that translate what someone's saying to you in real time. As you have them in your ears. I mean, we already have the ability. I've got a Spanish, complete Spanish translation of Biblical Citizenship in Modern America. So that's our course at Patriot Academy, our most popular course. A million people have been through it. You know, we've had a ton of Hispanic churches begging us for a Spanish language version so that we can teach people that whether they came here legally or illegally, if they're here and they haven't been deported, we want them to learn a biblical perspective of how to treat their neighbor, right? We want them to learn how the Constitution works and why they came to America and why this system has produced the greatest, most powerful, most free, most benevolent nation in the history of the world. And if they don't get deported, we want them to live by those principles and those standards. And if they do get deported, we want them to take those principles with them and take those back to wherever they came from. So anyway, we're doing the Spanish version of Biblical Citizenship, and it's an AI amazing video translation thing where you watch the video and it's me. I'm speaking Spanish fluently in my voice with my lips moving to that. It's incredible. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how it works. I just know it works. And so that in and of itself was remarkable. But now the ability to translate in real time and be able to understand anybody from anybody anywhere in the world, that's beyond my theology, okay? I don't spend a lot of time on the end time stuff. I just don't, because no man knows the day, and I just, there's certain things I got time for and certain things I don't have time for. And so I don't know, but man, when you couple that with what you just suggested in terms of almost like a one world economy, if there's no tariffs and you total free trade, I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. And I have no problem saying I don't know. But it sure is, if anybody remembers the church lady, is one of those things that makes you go, All right, let's go. I said we go back to Arkansas. Let's go back to Arkansas. It's Tony in Arkansas this time. Tony, you're up, man. Go ahead.
Big Rick Green, we've talked before. I'm here in Hot Springs. But
yes, sir.
I wanted to say that we, back in even 2016, we hired Trump to do the job because he was known as a businessman. And I just want to sum it up in a few words, and I'll jump off, that we got to trust him, and we got to pray that God will bless him, and we just got to put our faith and trust in that. And we don't need to worry about, if he's making some deals, we know he's doing it for the best for America and for us American people, because that's what he campaigned on, and that's what he's working towards. Yeah. And we don't need to, you know, the Bible says to fear not, fear not. So we just don't need to worry about it and let him do his thing. And then we'll be praying, and God will bless him all the way.
I
love it that he prayed in the Oval Office and did all that stuff there and that. And I just hope he keeps that true to, trusting in the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it is one of those things that it's new territory. And like you said, I mean, he's we hired him for this purpose. And like I said, trust the guy in the room. I'm not so much in favor of not, paying it. And you didn't say don't pay attention to it. You said don't worry about it, which you're right. We shouldn't worry anyway. But I do like paying attention to it, and I do like reporting on it. And certainly we should let our voices be heard, because what if he does something that we know is biblically not sound, or is not, and he's going to stake out some policy positions that we disagree with. We're not going to agree with him 100% of the time. And so I definitely want to speak out in those times when he's doing something that we 100% disagree with. This one, like I said, I'm somewhat not on the fence, but I'm definitely leaning in favor of the tariffs, and have my concerns about the economic impact or anti-free market side of it. But again, it's not within our borders. It's not tariffs between states. And that would be a very different thing and would be unconstitutional. Okay, let's go to Kansas. David in Kansas, you're up next. We'll see if we can't get maybe two more calls in before we run out of time here. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I just had a couple comments, if I may. One is, this should have been done 50 years ago, back prior when we had a manufacturing base, when we had the technological advantage. First of all, we should never let it go this far. But the other thing I would say is that if American business and American labor will hold off on wanting to raise their prices automatically, then I think something like this could work. But if American labor, American business isn't on board with this, then it's not going to work. I'll listen off the air. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Rick.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I would say it's kind of a split deal out there right now based on what I'm hearing. I mean, Wall Street's definitely responding negatively. Supposedly, it's because of the tariffs. I mean, there's a lot of things you can point to, and that's the biggest, probably driver of the needle moving one way or the other. But I think it's a split deal. I think small business is probably more impacted by this, and big business is able to deal with this stuff a little bit more, plan for it, prepare for it, make moves that allow them to take advantage of it. But that will be a big part of the report card, if you will, on the pros and cons of how this thing works out. But the biggest report card is going to be the economy overall. And I think we may be looking at early 2026 to be able to really know how much these things, which direction they have impacted this whole thing, because it's an entire package. It's tax cuts, it's tariffs, it's getting the boot of government off the neck of the American people. That's the biggest thing. You cut government, you get rid of a lot of these bureaucrats that are harassing the American people. You reduce the cost of government and the fraud and all of those things. The payoff on that is going to be huge. Yes, I can't say it like him. Huge. It's going to be incredible. Anyway, all right, we're out of time for today, folks. Thanks so much for participating with the phone calls. Thanks for listening. Be sure and share the program with your friends and family. I'm Rick Green. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Have you ever wondered why our society is so ravenous to abort babies? Well, according to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents. They sickly believe that the blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies, in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills, where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. Every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. Donate securely today. Dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 or go to preborn.com, preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.